It's almost ready. Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the afternoon meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Welcome, everyone. Would you read the item on the agenda, please?
Item 505, adopt new and amended supporting documents for an update of Portland's comprehensive plan, accept report of the Citizen Involvement Committee. Item 506, adopt a new comprehensive plan for the City of Portland, Oregon.
Great, thank you. So, welcome everyone. The decisions being made today are for the purpose of establishing an as amended plan so that our staff can prepare final findings for our consideration. The final vote for the as amended plan is scheduled for June 15th. We have an agenda developed for today to allow us to walk through amendments and make decisions on amendments that have already been offered. I do want to make it clear that the votes today do not indicate or prejudice the vote that we each will cast on the findings and the final plan. In other words, voting to adopt amendments does not commit someone to voting for the as-adopted plan. As we make motions today, I ask all of us to refer to the amendment numbers printed in the original BPS report from March 18th. If you are referring to further amendments or amendments to those amendments, please reference the appropriate supplemental memo, if you can, by date and item number, or ask our staff to help you with that if you can't remember. And so, again, we will ask our clerk to read the descriptions like we did before so that we stay on track, because there's just a lot of amendments on a lot of subjects in a lot of places. And so both the council members can stay clear on what we're considering, and so folks that are here or following this process can. We'll try to keep following that procedure in each of these hearings as we work our way through amendments. So with that, I think I'm ready to turn it over to the team and we can start down the list.
Good afternoon. My name is Eric Engstrom with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. As the mayor indicated, we're here today to talk about amendments to the recommended comp plan. This is the second of two sessions to do that. And if we don't get through the agenda today, then we'll talk about how to continue this. You should have before you a May 11th agenda, which lists the items that we're going to consider in the order. And we'll use that to go through through the items. And of course, if you have questions, we anticipate questions. Staff are here to help answer those. There's some of you may be working from your own notes from staff, and I just wanted to let you know that we did update the agenda today very slightly by adding some errata items to the end. So if you're working off your own notes, that's fine until practically the last page, and I'll note where those corrections have been made as we went. But you should also have a copy of the new version that just in case.
Okay.
So can I just do a time check? We're going until 6 o'clock?
I think that's right. We're going to go to 6 o'clock if that works for you.
Striving for that.
Okay. I actually have to leave at 6 to get to another event. So.
Yeah, I do too. So I think we'll go to 6 o'clock.
And in fact, if it looks like we are not going to get done by 6, then maybe a merciful ending at 5:30. So if we're going to go over anyway.
Okay, we'll see how we're doing.
It's been a long
time off for good behavior or bad behavior. I'm not sure which.
We'll see how we're doing.
So the first couple items are a few other bundles with multiple amendments packaged together that have a similar theme. And there's just a few of those this time. We held a few as a courtesy to Commissioner Fish, who may be interested in some of those topics. And then after that, we start going into individual items that had been held over or flagged for individual consideration. That's the bulk of today's agenda, so it's kind of the harder items. We're starting with the map items because that has a bigger effect on our findings and our final ordinance, and so we want to make sure that we get as much of that done as possible. And then we'll go into a few of the remaining policy items towards the end. And as I mentioned, we sent a few corrections to your staff this morning, which I'll highlight as we get to those. Any process questions before we get into that?
That's clear.
So I think that starts us, and we numbered starting from the one we left off on last time. So the first item should be related to the age-friendly city policy amendments list.
So you want someone to move it?
So I move to adopt the age-friendly city policy amendments list.
Second.
Carla, would you please read the description of that item?
This includes policy amendments 72, 91, and 94.
Okay.
And Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to pull 94 for a separate consideration to unbundle it.
Okay. So is there a second on that motion to pull 94?
And on those kinds of motions, I think it's a, just, as long as we're not substantively doing it, it's a courtesy.
And do it as a, that's right.
I'll
that's right.
Second.
Okay. We don't need to second those. That's right. So we'll act on 72 and 91 then, instead of on the other, on 94. Any further discussion on action on that amendment? Okay, so let's take a vote, please, on that item as amended.
Fish?
Aye.
Holtzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hale?
Aye. Okay. So now I'll move to adopt the affordable housing and anti-displacement policy amendments list. Carla, would you please read the description? Oh, do you want to deal with 94 first? 94. Let's go back and deal with 94.
Just so we don't get...
Let's not get lost, right. Let's. And 94 is on what page?
Page 42.
Yeah.
Or 41 if you're looking
Camille,
at your...
Camille, I need my larger book. So I think... Oh, it's on 42 in the packet.
Yeah, the new packet or 41. Of the previous draft.
In the new one.
Yeah.
This was.
Hey, Steve, what's your concern about this?
So, this is one where BPS staff recommended no change. PBOT noted that there's a similar objective already in the TSP under 622 under separate cover. Another suggestion was if you wanted to have this, it'd be better off in Chapter 8 as it relates to improvements of the right of way. And finally, if we wanted to elevate, if we do want to elevate this to a policy anywhere, staff suggest using the word encourage rather than provide, rather than saying it's part of the comprehensive plan that we will provide such facilities.
Is that your amendment?
So my amendment, actually, I oppose the proposal, but those are other ways of dealing with it if council wants to pass it anyway.
And why do you oppose it?
Because we don't think it's necessary.
So I can support it with the change to encourage. Which I understand has some other council support.
Okay, so Commissioner Novick moves that we change provide to encourage, and that's seconded by Commissioner Fritz. So let's just explicate that for a second. What's the effect of that change?
So it would be a new policy, and I'm agnostic as to whether it goes in this place or somewhere else, but the policy would state at pedestrian amenities, encourage facilities that enhance pedestrian enjoyment, such as transit shelters, garbage containers, benches, etc., in the right of way.
I mean, yes, but what's the effect, the difference in effect from changing provide to encourage?
It provide may imply that you're going to build those things, and encourage is a more gentler word.
I actually prefer provide, because there's a lot in this comprehensive plan that there's a lot of competing policies that we don't have the funding for. So stating a more strong policy would be my preference. But if others are concerned about that, I can go with encourage.
Okay. Further?
Well, I'm sorry, because I wasn't at the last hearing. Has BPS weighed in on whether they are support or not this amendment?
We had initial, I think the comments here reflect PBOT considerations. We're kind of agnostic on this, but we agree that...
prefer it to be amended, though.
That we agree that the word encourage may make more sense.
So you support the amendment, but are otherwise agnostic, and PBOT opposes it. Is that right?
But wanted to change.
Yeah, I think they're willing
to change, but otherwise...
They're not opposed to the concept. They just had a different idea about where it should be within the hierarchy of policies.
Let's test first. Let's make the amendment,
right,
and then
so
see where we are.
See where we are. Okay. Ready to take a vote on that amendment? Could you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ailes?
Aye. Okay. So that's done.
And, Steve, can I just ask you, just so I'm clear from PBOT's point of view, now that it's amended, what's your position?
That it's a necessary at all, but if it is going to be here, it should be in Chapter 8 rather than in Chapter 9.
And I'm fine with that.
So is that a friendly amendment, or does that require another vote?
It's a friendly amendment.
Yeah, you can place it where you want, can't you?
Well, I think if we just got instructions, it would be clear. Chapter 8 is, or this section's of Chapter 8 are related to public rights away. We can just add this policy to that, correct? So if we would just get that direction, it'd be fine.
Okay.
So do you need
a motion?
You need a motion. Okay, so Commissioner Novick moves to put this language in Chapter
Second.
8 instead of 9.
And then to adopt it, right? That's, we don't have to have another vote.
So we're going to take this vote in one motion to adopt this now amended language, but place it in Chapter 8. Okay, roll call, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
A grudging aye.
Fritz.
How about a generous aye? Aye.
Ailes.
Aye. Okay.
Thank you.
Now I'll move on to number 34, and I'll move to adopt the Affordable Housing and Anti-Displacement Policy Amendments List. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Carla, would you please read that item?
This includes Policy Amendments 46, 47, and 71. See page 42 for details. This bundle does not include P45, Middle Housing, P48, Mobile Home Parks, P49, Housing Continuum, and P15 and 70, Community Benefits, which have been pulled for individual consideration.
Okay. Any discussion, any questions about these three policy statements? Okay, let's take a vote, please, on those.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. All right, number 35. Move to adopt the Community Involvement Policy Amendments List. Carla, would you please, I'm sorry, is there a second?
Second.
Would you please read that item?
This includes Policy Amendments 105 and 106. It also includes items 1 and 2 from the Fritz memo dated April 13 about Goal 2F and a new policy about the adequate funding of community involvement. See page 43 for details. This bundle does not include P5 and P9 stakeholder groups, P8 neighborhood associations and business associations, P11 open data, which have been pulled for individual consideration.
Okay. Any questions or concerns about this language that we now have here? Okay. Ready to take a vote on this one?
I just have one. Sure. Shared. There was another one that I had asked for, and I'm not sure if it's included in this package, from a previous memo on GP2-11 on adequate funding and human resources. Is that part of this, and was it in the errata list?
Yes, that's part of that. That's the one that I think that she just referred to.
So we've already...
The adequate funding is one of those.
So we're good. Thank you.
Okay, roll call, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. Now we're going to move to map amendments, right? We're done with policy for now. So the first one of those is number 36, which is S8, the Portland nursery property. So this was requested by Commissioner Saltzman. Any discussion before we take a vote on this? Or sorry, I'll move to adopt amendment number S8.
Second. As you go through these map items, if you would like any photographs or maps to accompany the discussion,
yeah,
we have that
yeah.
on the PowerPoint.
Be helpful if those are up with us. Okay. Yeah, and I know it's nice to see the person speaking, but I think for purposes of this discussion, we ought to try to just use the whole slide for the map because it's pretty hard to see otherwise.
So this amendment concerns the back half of the Portland nursery site at 5050 Southeast Stark, which the amendment seeks to redesignate as mixed use. The Planning Commission recommendation was that the mixed use be on the front portion of the site where the buildings are and that the back half retain residential designations, with the caveat that we do some code work to clarify that nurseries can be conditional uses in residential zones.
Right. So, in other words, to develop this property, redevelop this property, if the whole property were redeveloped, it would most likely require a conditional use process.
Correct. The result of a no vote on this would be that staff will continue to work on that code issue and with a process for conditional use for nursery expansion or changes in the residential zone.
Well, that's code to be developed.
To be developed.
Allow nurseries as conditional use.
And come back to you, yeah.
Yeah, are we all clear on the effect of this one?
Yeah, and the concern of the neighborhood is that a yes vote on this amendment would allow potentially big box development on this site should the nursery go away completely. So I think the Planning Commission tried to strike a balance between allowing the current uses and allowing for a conditional use process.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of cases like this where the current property owner is one thing and maybe some other property owner would be different, and zoning doesn't discriminate. You know, we can hope that always people will be responsible, but that's not necessarily enough. Okay, we ready to vote? Roll call, please.
Fish.
No.
Saltzman.
Well, I will continue to support this amendment, although I am encouraged to hear about the allowing nurseries to be a conditional use. I think that it's pretty safe to say, from my feeling, that this property will remain Portland Nursery for the foreseeable future for at least 20 years. And this was a request that the family has made to provide them some certainty as well as flexibility. And I don't think, you know, big box retail is really the fear I have at this point for the next 20 years. So I will vote yes.
Novick.
I understand the concerns Portland Nursery has raised, and I want to say that we value them as a great business and neighbor in our city, but I think staff have offered a practical compromise in allowing nursery operations as a conditional use in residential zones. This change gives the business the opportunity to obtain a conditional use and be able to make improvements in their buildings on the residentially zoned portion of the property while also giving neighbors some certainty. No.
Fritz.
No.
Hales.
No. Okay, so that amendment fails. All right, the next map amendment is number 37.
And
here we've divided into multiple pieces. Go ahead, please, Eric.
We've bundled these together because they both are, the golf course is related to the employment designation question, and we thought that this made sense to discuss as one package. You may recall the M33 amendment would remove the industrial sanctuary designation from the M34 designation amendment would remove the industrial sanctuary from Riverside Golf Course and restore it to open space, and the M33 would add the industrial sanctuary to Broadmoor. So essentially it was a swap. You may vote on these individually or separate, but they were presented initially as a pair.
And just to be clear, if the council votes both, or you've now consolidated them. So if we vote the package down, then the result is that the PSC recommendation stands, which is industrial sanctuary designation on Riverside, without moving anything to Broadmoor, correct?
Right. If you vote against both, you would effectively be retaining the PSC recommendation, which is what you just said.
Okay.
So we're voting on these individually, though.
We can. They've
like
set
to.
Them up
different.
As motions, but we can take them individually. If
I
whatever.
Have different votes on the two. So.
Okay. So Commissioner Fritz moves amendment number M30. You want to do Broadmoor first?
Sure.
Commissioner Fritz moves amendment M33, which is the Broadmoor amendment. Okay. Is everybody clear on that? So this would be adding the industrial sanctuary designation on a portion of the site as requested by the property owner. All right, everybody clear on that? Okay, then let's take a vote, please, on amendment M33.
I'm a strong no on this amendment, and I just want to explain my vote. When we started discussing the comp plan, Riverside Golf Course came to the city and asked not to have the industrial zoning on their property, and their neighbor Broadmoor essentially offered to take all or a portion of it. I think at the time it might have sounded like a good idea and a rare instance of an easy solution. I think it quickly became apparent to me and others that there are no real easy solutions in this area, and then we started hearing testimony from lots of stakeholders. We've heard passionate testimony from the community about this property and about the birds and turtles and watershed health. The Bureau of Environmental Services joined the chorus of voices urging us not to approve this swap. I've listened carefully to all the testimony, and I cannot support switching the industrial zoning onto Broadmoor. No.
No.
Novick?
I second Commissioner Fish's comments. No.
Fritz.
And to be clear, Broadmoor is converting a, under the Planning Commission's recommendation, there is a portion. It's just that we don't agree to have more because a compromise was worked out. No.
Fails.
No. Amendment M33 fails. And now, would you like to move Amendment 34, Commissioner Fritz, as well?
I moved.
I'll second that. Okay, so this
explain 34 to us one more time.
So this one removes the industrial designation from Riverside, right?
Correct. This is this would be an amendment to the Planning Commission recommendation and would remove the industrial designation from Riverside. The effect of that, we explained a little bit last week, is related to the EOA, the Employment Opportunities Analysis, and the balance of industrial land. The result of removing Riverside would leave us in a somewhat negative balance in the land supply equation within the EOA for this particular geography. Tom, do you want to go over that at any? Oh, yeah, there's a table on the screen that I can put up that sort of walks you through the outcome of the different amendments. So the you've already said no to M33, so you essentially are left with the choice of either the first row or the last row in terms of where that leaves you with the balance. And the if you vote no on this as well, you're essentially maintaining the PSC recommendation, which would leave us with a balance of 52 acres in the harbor and airport districts, 92 overall within all industrial areas. If you vote yes on this, you would leave us with a 3-acre deficit in this geography, which would join the, Tom, remind me, like a 25-acre deficit on the lands with direct access to the river. So we would have 2 out of our 3 employment geographies with a negative number. Albeit small negatives.
So I'm getting lost in the double negatives here. So are you recommending, given the vote on M33, are you recommending a no on M34?
We are.
If I might speak in support of M34, we heard a lot of testimony from the property owners that they have no intention of changing this to industrial land in the foreseeable future. So I think we need to be accountable in our designation, and rather than pretending that we're going to have industrial development here in the next 20 years, go back to the consideration of the underlying questions, which are, is there support for the moderate forecast for the industrial lands inventory with regard to harbor and airport land? And maybe that's one of the choices, is to the port and others said that we could get there without West Haven Island, and we previously heard we could get there without Riverside. This is relatively new information that without any industrial zoning on Riverside, that there is a deficit of this particular kind of land in this particular location. And so I'm looking to the planning staff to look at what are these are not the only 2 properties in that geography that could be industrially zoned. Are there other options?
Tom Armstrong with BPS. You know, this question has come up. We've looked at this issue and looked for properties to convert to industrial and employment uses for the last 6 years. We had the Industrial Lands Watershed Health Work Group that came up with the proposal to designate Riverside as industrial for future use. We looked at a lot of different options. I think we've turned over pretty much every rock. I mean, we even discussed the possibility of PIR going to industrial development. So I don't think there is any other parcel out there that hasn't been looked at and sort of not proposed for other reasons. We looked at the St. John's landfill. We looked at some other properties out there as to what might be available to help satisfy our industrial land needs. I think what we came back with was a combination that allows us to take the medium
cargo forecast in the harbor access lands and count the existing capacity, it still shows us a small deficit there. We were going to meet that with the surplus in the rest of the harbor upland area and the Columbia corridor, but taking Riverside, well, not having either Broadmoor or Riverside as an industrial designation takes us below that threshold and makes that strategy a little bit harder to work.
So can I ask a legal question? Because Commissioner Fritz, I think, is getting at a very important potentially legal or policy question. In almost every instance where we're designating industrial land, we're leaving to the market and to future contingencies whether it is actually developed. We cannot mandate that. So in a sense, there is a level of uncertainty about whatever, maybe the shades of gray. But the fact that today the golf course says we're not interested, that could change tomorrow if someone came and made an offer that no one could resist. So legally, what is the standard that we have to apply here? Do we have to reasonably believe it will be developed, or are we just designating land that could be developed?
I think the reasonable level is there based on the evidence before you, but we make those reasonable assumptions about what will redevelop for all different types of land, for central city office buildings. You know, will surface parking lots develop in the future or not, without any indication or preference from the property owner? We do that all along our centers and corridors. We assume, based on what we've seen from development trends, what is likely to redevelop and what doesn't, and that's what goes into our buildable land inventory as to what that development capacity is going to be over the next 20 years.
So can the state reviewers that look at our plan, in light of the current position of the golf course, could they conclude that this is not a bona fide designation?
I would look to Catherine Beaumont there, but I would say that they could conclude that, but the first place they're going to look to is what your decision was when you looked at all of the evidence before you and give deference to the local decision on what was a reasonable assumption for the likelihood of redevelopment of that property over the next 20 years.
There's also a slightly higher bar if we were counting this as short-term immediate land supply. The land supply is divided up into long-term and short-term, short-term being, I believe, 5 years versus the 20 years. And if we were asserting this in our five-year supply, there'd be a little bit more of a test. But 20 years is a long time to judge what the property owner might do.
And don't we also have, in essence, a brownfield conversion rate that could be adjusted up or down as the market shows us. But, I mean, that could be the, you know, I don't know if this is politically correct, but this could be our fudge factor, I mean, is to adjust the brownfield conversion rate.
We'll just strike that from the record.
Well, no, there's variability across those assumptions. We think that we can stand behind them, but exactly how this is going to play out could be different. And we just need a sort of a safety buffer in our estimation of it.
Okay. All right. Other questions before we
could
vote?
Could you just put the map up, please, again? And those two on Riverside, there seems to be two parcels there.
When we looked at the Riverside parcel, we actually split the golf course into two pieces. One, to the west, there is a water slough there to the west and a bunch of existing environmental zone, overlay zones that cover the western portion of the property. And the proposal, the PSC recommendation, was to leave that in open space and that only the eastern portion of the Riverside Golf Course that fronts onto Northeast 33rd Avenue, that chunk of land would be have the industrial comp plan designation.
But there isn't actually a lot line there. It's
correct. It's a land use designation based on our assessment of e-zones and its appropriateness as open space. It's the same kind of judgment. It's not shown on this particular map, but we did have a portion right of Broadmoor that was available for redevelopment in this.
Right, the frontage on Columbia Boulevard.
So could there potentially be 3 to 5 acres that was fronting on a road that could be designated industrial so that our numbers balance, but leaving the vast majority of the golf club in open space?
I'm not sure what that accomplishes other than math. I mean, the math matters, but in each of these cases, we have to weigh what we think makes good planning sense, what we've heard in testimony, and what the property owner wants. All three count. Obviously, in Broadmoor's case, the property owner made a request, and we've denied it. We're not going to do that. In this case, the property owner requested that the site be left in open space designation, and that they don't intend to redevelop it. Well, if we could decide contrary-wise, we're basically saying at some point in the future, your property is eligible for industrial development. How much of it ends up actually getting industrially developed could be the result of e-zoning, could also be the result of the kind of project proposal that the Trust for Public Lands put together with Colwood, right? So that was a kind of a wonderful example of how it could work, right? We got a lot of resource land protected, got a park, got a bunch of industrial property. Oh, by the way, we're putting the post office there. Everybody wins, or at least most people win. So I don't know. I don't want to prejudge exactly what portion of this property ends up being developed as industrial if we leave it as in the sanctuary.
I'm just looking at your handy-dandy...
Right, my Google Earth, right?
Google, whatever it is. Yeah. The the top piece that's kind of sticking up above the rest looks to me like it's not developed as golf course, that it could perhaps be a lovely three-acre industrial parcel that would be developable in active use, and that they might
actually even... beyond the parcel boundary. I think you're talking about this? That's outside of the parcel. Boundary is the golf course itself.
Well, too bad. Never mind.
That was a good idea, but they don't own it.
Got to get them to put those lines on.
That's what we've been doing for the last few years.
Yeah.
These guys have been there, done that.
I would also remind you that at the moment we're not proposing to rezone these sites.
Right.
This is a comp plan designation. So there could be a second look at this upon the rezone request, and if it were appealed to you.
Mayor, I move the question.
Okay, let's take a vote unless there's any other questions. Okay, roll call, please.
Ish?
No.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm going to support this amendment. I do believe we should lift the industrial sanctuary designation from this property. It's been requested by the Riverside Golf Course, which has been here for over 100 years. They have no intention of going away. And if nothing else, the person who cuts my hair is a member of the Riverside Golf Course, and you don't want me to show up here on Monday with a bad haircut. I need to vote yes.
That's full disclosure.
that's one of the more unusual conflicts of interest I've heard.
No big.
See,
it's a really tough choice, but between seeing Dan Saltzman with a bad haircut and having inadequate industrial land inventory, I regretfully and with ambivalence vote no.
Fritz.
I think this is the right. We should be honest and figure out how we're going to do things, and if that means changing our economic forecast, then that's what we should do. So I vote yes.
Hales.
Although I respect the property owner's interest and concern, I think we do need to maintain an adequate industrial land inventory. So I'm going to vote no. So that amendment fails. All right. Let's move on to number S9, 122nd Avenue. I'll move the map amendment S9. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so you want to discuss this one for a minute?
Yeah, let's discuss this for a sec, because I would benefit, since I wasn't here last time, for having at least the benefit of Commissioner Saltzman's view.
Yeah, so Dan.
Sure. I very strongly believe that this site is appropriate for mixed-use employment and residential, and not just employment, which is the proposed PSC designation. I don't regard this as abutting the Columbia Corridor, even though it's described that way. It feels very far away. I think we're all familiar with the site. It's right across from Park Rose High School, in essence. And this just seems like a great place for mixed-use employment and residential, and, in fact, there is a company that wants to come in and do exactly that. And I think the plans they've shown us are very, very attractive. And I think this is just spot on right for Park Rose.
Who's the current owner of this dirt?
Not sure I know that.
Well, have they weighed in?
Have weighed in and requested. They're supporting the amendment.
They're supporting Commissioner Saltzman's position.
Yeah, I believe the amendment was in response to their testimony.
And
yes,
does,
exactly.
I know that BPS has determined it's well-suited for employment land. And obviously, job creation in East Portland is a priority. But do you have a principled objection to Commissioner Saltzman's amendment?
I think the concerns we had are a couple. One is that is the industrial land equation. The second was the this is right next to Sandy Boulevard and is close to the Airport Way district, essentially. And our concern is that if it is available for housing, the market will probably produce housing there rather than making it available for the more employment. And we looked at a concern about the lack of high-wage jobs in East Portland and prioritized that over the need for housing at this particular location. On the Rossi Farm site, we're making the other determination and saying that that, because of its direct proximity to the high school, may make sense to do the mixed-use residential.
And just as a reminder, we did vote on that last time to make both the Rossi Farms and the post office site mixed use. So there's a lot that actually is right next to Parkrose High School. This property being further down on 122nd, it seems to me, and we heard from the RK Terrace Neighborhood Association, that they are concerned about not only jobs and good, well-paying jobs in the neighborhood, but also the mix of income levels for the two elementary schools in the neighborhood that are struggling with the number of apartments and low-income families, which are welcomed in the neighborhood. They just want to make sure that there's a balance of jobs, single-family homes, and mixed use.
Yeah, I think there's a chance here with everything that can happen in the Parkrose area with the Rossi property and the school district's property. And this property and the post office site across it, there's a chance to create a better neighborhood center, which everyone hopes for and has in mind here. And certainly the plans for the Rossi property are the key to that, but not the only part of that. And so I think to change this parcel from employment to mixed use really dilutes the opportunity to create that strong center here. And I think more large apartment complexes along Sandy doesn't necessarily get us the community design that we want. I understand every property owner wants flexibility, and we give some deference to that in this process. But this is a gigantic site that, developed wrong, will really erode that vision, and developed right in terms of employment could really give a lot of people that are going to now live here a place to work. So I don't support this amendment.
I thank my colleagues for the discussion. I'm prepared to vote.
Anybody else clear on this one? Ready to vote? Okay, let's take a vote, please.
I appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's concerns, and I think they're well stated, but I'm going to stick with BPS on this one and the mayor's view of how the various sites all interact. So I respectfully vote no.
Saltzman.
Well, I vote yes.
Novick.
I also am going to stick with the staff recommendation on this one. No.
Fritz.
No.
Hales.
No. Okay, the amendment fails. All right, let's move on to number 38, right? M47.
This is one that you started talking about last time, and I think you got close, but wanted to hold over for think about it.
Right. And we've got multiple possible motions down here at the bottom of the page, so I'm trying to work my way back through that as well. So the issue here was there was an original request regarding a portion of this site being zoned multifamily along Northwest Wilson, right?
That's the black box on this.
There we go. And then the question is, what about the balance? Well, that's one question. And the other question is, what about the balance of the site, right?
Right.
Walk
so
us
the,
through that, Eric, please.
The first motion is if you want just the Wilson, I lost my cursor again. If you want just the black box to be R2, mm-hmm. Motion B was a variation on that, which would make it R1, which was the original property owner's request, I believe. Motion C is the whole picture where you do both, and you not only go with R1 on the Wilson side, but you go with EX for the balance on the red box. A no vote would be essentially retaining the Planning Commission's recommendation, which would leave mixed employment in the red box and the black box.
Mayor, can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
I'm prepared to second motion C, and that might expedite things to see if we have a third.
And could you explain again what C is?
Commissioner Novick is the author, so.
Yes, and I'm confident that I have a second. I move motion C, which is modify map amendment number N47, as noted in my memo dated April 12th, that would designate 2135 Northwest 29th Avenue as multi-dwelling 1000, and designate the other parcels noted as EX Central Employment.
So I'll second that for discussion, and Steve, can you then explain?
Yes. I wanted to note that since our last meeting, I took some time to visit the site and was struck by how dramatically underutilized this area is. To quote Gertrude Stein, there's no there there. It's been zoned for employment uses for decades, but has not produced many jobs. This amendment creates an opportunity for more flexible uses that will better serve the surrounding residential neighborhood as well as improve the street network within this area. The potential developer has worked closely with the Northwest District Association, which supports the changes in the amendments. We've also heard directly from individual neighbors in support of the amendment. I do understand the concerns the mayor raised last time about allowing residential uses and what's traditionally been a buffer between the residential and industrial areas, but I've also been impressed by the potential developer's willingness to address concerns about new residential uses close to the industrial sanctuary to the north of Nicolai by ensuring that future residents are aware of nearby industrial uses before they decide to live there.
You put the map back up, please.
Yeah, back. So this is, as I understand motion C, it's two changes, right? We're going to multi-dwelling 1,000 instead of 2,000 on the black bounded parcel, right? And we're going to EX on the red parcel, right?
Correct. And R1 is the designation to the south across the street.
Yeah, so I guess I was interested in this idea, but I'm not sure if it isn't going too far, Steve. That is, my theory about this from the beginning when the property owner first started presenting this idea is, okay, we got townhouse-style development on one side of the street. If you zone that black box area as R2, you get similar development, right? You get a similar scale of development facing the neighborhood on Wilson. Then the question is, okay, maybe that's a good idea. What do you do with the rest of the parcel? And then that's the second half of your amendment. Going to EX, give us a quick recap of the difference of the kind of development we could get in EX there versus what was the other designation?
EG.
EG.
So going forward, the difference between the EX and EG would basically be the ability to put residential in there.
So the other commercial industrial stuff is allowed in both cases?
Yeah, the EG zone, you can do quite a bit of office development as well as a little bit of retail, 20,000 square feet of retail, up to 60,000 with a conditional use. So you can get that mix of intensive employment uses. You just can't get the residential with the EG mixed employment designation.
And as we discussed last time, the concern is with Giles Lake Industrial Sanctuary being across the road on Nicolai, how do we, is it wise to allow fairly intense residential development right across the street from the industrial sanctuary? And while, yes, you might tell people that there's going to be challenges, I think the people who moved into the Pearl knew that there were going to be not train noises, and that's still something that they'd like to change and such. So I'd like to actually split these two into two different amendments, because I can support the R1 on the black box. I don't support the EX on the red box simply because I don't think that's appropriate to put across the street from the industrial area.
Mayor, I would move motion C. Let's test if we have
all right, let's test motion C as a package, and then if we need to unbundle it, we can. So I'm now persuaded on motion C. I'm going to not oppose it, but I'm interested in unbundling it. So anyone else want to speak before we do that? All right, let's take a vote then on motion C as offered, and then we'll see if that passes or doesn't pass.
Which is both the R1 and the EX.
Yeah, R1 on the Wilson parcel and EX on the remainder.
Okay. This?
Yeah, I'm going to support this motion, and I'm also intrigued by the opportunity to do some live work and some maker space in proximity on this site. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
I think it's really important to note that this has been a place where nothing has happened for decades, and the fact that we have an opportunity to have some lib work and makerspace here, something I don't think that we should let slip. I think that this parcel will continue to be, this area will continue to be underutilized unless we make this change. Aye.
Ritz.
Possibly the reason that not much has happened is because many people don't want to be right next to the industrial area. No.
Hales.
I'm going to vote no and hope you're right. I'm afraid that what we won't get is makerspace, but it is a question mark, and we'll see. It'll be a little bit of an experiment. So I vote no, but the motion passes. So motion C has passed, and both of those changes are made, R1 on the Wilson parcel and EX on the rest. Okay, let's move on to 39.
And just a question, because we're going to have a number more of these amendments. Does the change from EG to EX make any difference in our industrial land inventory or employment numbers?
Yes, but in this case, the impact you just made was just an acre or two, and because of your previous votes, you still have a surplus.
Okay. In that category of land.
So as we're going through all of these amendments, if you could call out to us, what does this do to the industrial employment lands inventory, that would be helpful.
And that was actually the last one that has an effect. So you're actually done with the employment land discussion.
Okay.
We're shifting to mixed-use considerations.
And overall, with respect to employment land, we're in good shape.
You got it to balance.
We're a little more marginal on industrial land, per se, but true employment land of one kind or another, we're generously supplied.
So, given the votes you've all made, where you stand now is you still have a minor deficit in the properties with direct access to the river, but you have enough of a surplus in the others that you're on reasonable ground.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're at.
Excuse me, Mayor. I think you're using the wrong numbers.
Oops.
We're on 40 now.
I think the reason is because there was a numbering error in the original one we passed out, and the versions we passed out today corrected that. So,
all right, I'll go to the 40. New version. Sorry.
So just add one to all the numbers on your old version.
No, I'll actually use the new version, and I'll go back.
So what happened to the 39 in the old version?
You just voted on it.
It was, there was one without a number at all, and that's
okay.
The 39 in my version is Belmont, or Buckman. And what we just voted
on
was
39 before because
the old version.
Earlier one had no number, so we had skipped a number.
So, okay, let's get to the same
40 is now
program
public.
Here, yeah. Which is revised 5/11/16. That's the packet. That
just
we
go with the map number. It's N15, right?
N15 and S20.
Addresses.
Right. Yeah. I'll refer to those as we go along, too.
Yeah,
so.
To go to...
And we paired these because they both involve questions of mixed use in a fairly small section of southeast Belmont, between Belmont and Morrison. So we thought that you should consider them as a group.
Could you bring me up to date on whatever conversations people have had about this before we look at the options before us?
Sure. The 822 Southeast 15th is a property that is, and I'll skip ahead to that one. Is this property here. It's a corner property with three historic Victorian homes on it. It's currently zoned R1, and the property owner has requested mixed use, and the motivation for their request is to take advantage of the potential historic transfer of development rights code provisions in the proposed mixed use code. The neighborhood has opposed this request, and I think it's partly just an issue of trust as to, while they may trust the particular property owner involved, no one knows whether a property might change hands, and there's a fear of if the property did change hands that the homes would be torn down and mixed use would be built there.
Okay, so this is something I'm going to want you to flag, not just today, but as we're going forward. Because we're going to deal with Eastmoreland today. I don't think we're dealing with Euclid Heights today. But there are places in this plan where there's existing historic building stock. And the question that I want to keep raising in each case is, are we either creating or maintaining a zoning incentive? mean, there are financial incentives, but a zoning incentive to tear down the building that's there and build something else. I want to know that in each case, because I don't think we should create or maintain a zoning incentive. So again, there are places within that universe of properties, like the Kings Hill houses or Euclid Heights or Eastmoreland, where people could create and maybe in some cases will create a historic district. That's a good idea. That'll provide enhanced protection as well. But that's not what we're talking about today, and that's a separate process. The question that I want to focus on in this process is, are we creating a zoning incentive for tearing down historic buildings? Now, if the transfer of development rights was mandatory, that, okay, we'll give you that zoning designation, but you must preserve those old Victorians, I'd have a different attitude. But again, in each case, we should listen to what a property owner says their plans are and their assurances about what they will do and not do. Like, of course I wouldn't build big box retail on my 5 acres once you give me the zoning for it.
Once you give me permission to do so.
We should listen to what the property owner's plans and assurances are. But again, I want to err on the side of preservation and not on reliance on the property owner's assurances the property owner's assurances that, of course, I wouldn't tear those buildings down, or of course I wouldn't build that big box retail. So I want to step through these amendments and Buckman and also the others like them and make sure I'm hearing clearly, and I've had some conversations with the staff about this, but I think we need to have them more here with the whole council, of what are we doing with respect to creating, removing, or leaving unchanged a zoning incentive to tear down old structures that aren't necessarily protected by historic districts or designations.
I share that concern, Mayor, and it, as you said, applies to some of the places, potentially Elliott's and some of the neighbors right near Buckman. A couple of months ago, we had a discussion, I think in council as well as the mayor and I with planning staff, about what if we just have a plan district, what if we don't change any of the zoning in a designated area and take a more careful approach on this. Whatever happened to that? And in particular, how do we maintain a mosaic of different zoning designations and not feel like we have to zone an entire block or an entire neighborhood, this, that, or the other?
That question is coming up in a couple slides with a subsequent amendment that relates to the residential portion of Buckman.
We found another approach to accomplish that, but it's in an area that is more mosaic than this particular case. In this case, it's really more akin to what the mayor is talking about, I believe, in terms of increased development potential and no necessary guarantees what the outcome will be.
So we are going to talk about that in a few minutes, but this, we had broken out this one as a slightly separate issue.
So this is R1 now, and the request from the property owner was to make it mixed-use urban center.
That's a really intense designation.
Our zone. So I'll make the motion. I don't plan to vote for it, but I'll get it in play. So I'll move to adopt.
Mayor, can I?
Sure.
Before we do that, I'm playing catch up on this one. It's an important set of policy questions. Does anyone feel strongly about, we have two motions we could make. Does anyone feel strongly, you're going to vote no on which motion, Mayor?
I'm going to vote no on N15, and I might vote no on the other one as well. But
does anyone feel strongly the other way?
Yes. I'm a yes on N15 and a no on S20.
And Commissioner Novick, could you just explain why you have a different view?
So to reiterate a bit what Eric said, I introduced this amendment because a property owner requested to extend the mixed-use designation to the property, which includes four homes on a single tax lot. The four homes are listed on the historic register, so they can't be torn down unless they fall into disrepair and a request for delisting is granted. And the property owner wants to take advantage of a feature of the mixed-use zone that will allow him to transfer floor area ratio elsewhere in the city. And his plan is to use funds from that transfer to reinvest in the houses, making much-needed repairs. Although there aren't guarantees of preservation with this designation change, as BPS notes, I think the property owner's idea here is a good one that we should support. Given that the buildings are protected structures, it's difficult in any case to demolish them.
Right, I had forgotten that.
Yeah, and there's another way to accomplish that other than, I mean, we could have a new rule that says that you, if you've got a property with this kind of historic-like features, even if it's not actually historic, or if in this case it is historic, that we could change the rules on when you can transfer the FAR.
Yeah, you could ask us to look at, through the multi-dwelling zone update, whether the transfer that's available to the proposed mixed-use zone should be considered there, too.
Okay, and I had forgotten that these were already designated landmarks in this case. So I'll make the motion. I might change
second.
How I'm going to vote on it.
Second.
All right, so the motion is to adopt this amendment in this case, which would designate this site as mixed-use urban center and set up the scenario that Commissioner Novick just described. Are there further discussion or questions before we vote? Okay.
We're just voting on that one.
Just that one. Okay, let's take a vote, please.
Fish.
Good discussion. Aye.
Holtzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Putting an urban center designation on a property that's essentially in the neighborhood, it doesn't make any sense to me, no.
Hales?
Yeah, it's a close call because, again, the protection that I'm focused on has been assured by the historic designation, but the pattern still wouldn't make any sense. Yeah, so I'll vote no, but it does pass.
You can take, a property owner can take off the historic designation, surely. You know, that's one of the problems
right.
throughout the plan, is
oh,
that
yeah.
all the property owner has to do. Would anybody like to move
right.
to reconsider?
It's as strong as we get that protection, but it's a property owner consent, so you can remove it from the register.
I'll move to reconsider.
All right, you want to move to reconsider? Yeah.
So we vote on the motion to reconsider.
We need a second.
I second the motion. No, I don't.
I don't think
I can second a motion to reconsider because I didn't prevail, but somebody else.
I'll second for purpose of discussion.
Thank
okay,
you.
So let's take a vote to reconsider, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
No.
No, this is just to talk about it again.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it anymore. No.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, so we're going to reconsider the vote. I had forgotten that as well. So, sorry, getting fuzzy on some of the particulars here this afternoon. But that's right, because we've got that problem with our historic designation process, which is that the property owner can, with no community involvement or city regulatory power, take the designation off, right? So again, we're relying on a property owner's assurance that, of course, I'm not going to tear down these historic buildings.
So is your concern they can get their cake and eat it too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we give it.
They just
we give
sell
high,
it off, and
we're going to give it a very high density designation and hope that the assurances are true.
Okay.
Until we change the rate, here comes our historic planner. Maybe Brandon's got a thought
yeah.
here. Help us out here.
Give
Brandon.
Us some light.
Yeah.
So. Brandon Spencer Hartle, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm not familiar with the specific properties in question. If they are on the National Register of Historic Places, which I believe they are, and maybe Eric has knowledge of that, if they're on the National Register of Historic Places and a property owner is seeking demolition, they have two options to take. One is to seek removal of that designation, which does require a state review for properties on the National Register, because that is a higher level designation than our local designation. So the National Register is a process for delisting, but if a National Register property owner is not successful in delisting their National Register designation, they would come before this body with a Type 4 demolition review. And you may remember in 2015, you considered one of those Type 4 demolition reviews for the Buck Prager building in Northwest Portland.
Right.
What Commissioner Fritz is talking about are some of our local historic resources that do allow an owner to remove that designation with a simple request to Bureau of Development Services.
Thank you.
This,
so which
state
one
level.
Is this?
We believe it's national. Deborah, do you have
the market? Staff is nodding yes.
So it's national.
All right, so it is national.
Okay.
So it's very much like the Buck Prager building.
Right. And there are, right now in the code, the process for which they would gain approval for a Type 4 demolition review would be to demonstrate to this council that the property either the owner is suffering economic hardship and would need to demolish the resources, or the proposed replacement project better meets the goals of the comprehensive plan.
And they would have to make that case after they had transferred the FAR and reaped the benefit of that.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So again, we've got the are we protecting the buildings question, That's one question. I think I've got more clarity about that now.